Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Dev Influencers Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Max Wood, and I am going to be telling my story over the next few episodes, just as far as like how I got into podcasting, some of the things that have come out of podcasting, stuff like that. This kind of came out of, so one of the things that I do as a podcaster is I listen to other podcasts about podcasting, right? And my friend Luis Diaz from the Podcast Domination Show, he was actually talking about, you know, the first few episodes you should put out there. And I did the first episode the way that he says to do it. I just kind of did it instinctively, right? I talked about what the show is and what to expect and all that stuff. He said your second episode should be telling your story in like 15 minutes. Well, I've been podcasting for 12 years, podcasting about technology for 12 years. And I thought, you know what? I ought to just tell like a different chunk of that story for the next five or six episodes. So if you're looking for, yeah, kind of my background and what you can get out of podcasting, then stay tuned for the next few weeks, right? Or not for the next few weeks, for the next few days. I'm doing this daily. So let me dive in and let me just talk a little bit about how this all works, okay? So when I got into programming, it's funny because I'd written code in junior high school. I'd written code in high school. I'd written code on, you know, through college, right? I was a computer engineering major in college. Honestly, I thought programming was dumb in college. I did. I took all these classes, you know, and I was like, people do this for a living? This is stupid, right? You mean you don't do anything with these with this stuff, right? And it was really, really funny. So then what happened is I started working for the IT department at the college, right? And I was working in the operation center. And the operation center is right next to the data center where all of the servers were. In fact, I actually worked there before they built the data center. And so all the servers were basically jammed into this back room. I'm not kidding. In the math and computer science building on campus, right? And we were in this little office and we were all crammed in there next to it. And so all the mainframes and everything were just in that other room. They still had mainframes. How cool is that? They probably still do, actually, because some of those machines are just hard to replace and some of the code is old and, you know, again, hard to replace. So I wouldn't be shocked if they still have them. But for the most part, we were able to move most of the stuff off onto, you know, modern hardware and modern software. But that's neither here nor there. The point is that I worked in the operations center for a while, and then I moved down to work on the DevOps team, but it was the server admin team. And so I was a student employee there. I was part-time while I was finishing my degree. And while I was there, I met a guy that... And I'm telling this mostly because it's a little bit of flavor. He got me into two things. One was he was studying to go to law school so he'd become a patent attorney. And I thought, boy, that sounds cool. That sounds like a really interesting path. I almost became a patent attorney, folks. I didn't, obviously, but I almost did. So he was interning at a company in Provo, Utah. Which incidentally was where I was going to school and where I was living at the time. And so he got me a job there as an intern, right? And so I kind of pissed my boss off, right? Because he thought I was going to stay till I graduated. And I went over there and I started writing documentation and preparing for patent applications. And if any of you have written documentation for engineering, stuff. And this was, what they did was they drilled, they worked for, companies that drilled for oil. Right. And so they designed technology that was used to drill for oil. Right. And they had, you know, these systems that, you know, sent feedback back up the, pipe that they were using to drill with, you know, you get the idea. And so there was all this telemetry that went up the pipe. And, anyway, it was really, really interesting stuff, but getting the information from the engineers was like pulling teeth. And writing the documentation was actually no fun at all, right? It was interesting learning about the technology. It was no fun actually, you know, documenting it. And so I was there for like 3 months and I was like, I I do not want to be a patent attorney, right? I actually went and found some patent attorneys and talked to them, right, to figure out, you know, maybe this is just kind of internship, you know, BS, right, that I, you know, and if I do this, I'll get experience, but, you know, then ultimately, you know, patent attorney is something that I really want to do. And I was taking LSAT preps, and I was scoring in like almost the 90th percentile. So I could have gone to law school. And my GPA was, you know, north of 3.0. So I think I could have gotten in. But anyway, what was interesting was that, wasn't for me. So I went back. I went back to my old job, and my boss actually hired me back. And he let me know that he was not happy with me for having left. But what happened was he had already filled my position. And so he relegated me to the provisioning team that actually provisioned the servers up on campus, which is what I had started out doing on his team before I had moved over to actually managing the servers. And so I was provisioning stuff. I was working for a guy named Kirk, great guy. He was kind of a goofy guy, but he was a good guy. And one of the other students in my group, he had started putting together e-commerce sites. This is back in like 2003, 2004. Anyway, he was building them with PHP and MySQL, and hosting them on LampStack. And so he would actually get these catalogs, right? And he would put the pictures up and put the pricing up, and people would order from him, and then he would order it out of the catalog and send it to their house. And he was making a bunch of money. And so I thought, this is cool. And so I started building a website in PHP and MySQL. And that's really kind of how I got into some of the programming. And so I had this whole idea that I was going to build this apartment rental review site, right? And so then, you know, people could rate the apartment and say, hey, it's a nice place, or no, it's not a nice place. You know, it's real close to campus, not so close to campus. I went to Brigham Young University, and at BYU, you actually have to live in campus approved housing. And so a lot of the apartments around campus are campus approved. But, you know, that was another aspect, right? If it had to be campus approved, then, you know, it would kind of have a flag on there as to whether or not it was campus approved. And stuff like that, right? And so then if the landlord was a jerk, right, that would show up, and it probably wind up being harder to rent. If you had other issues with, anyway, I got really into writing this application. And at the same time, I'd been talking to some people, and they, and this all leads into the podcasting stuff, so bear with me. But I got talking to some folks, and they said, hey, look, you ought to have a job lined up when you graduate, right? So that instead of having your degree in one hand and having lost your student job, you know, you should be able to support your family, right? And so I started applying around for jobs, and I wound up getting a job before I graduated, about a semester before I graduated, at a company called Mosey over here in Pleasant Grove, Utah. And at Mosey, I was like employee number 10 or 11, and I had been hired to work on their tech support team. And we were just answering emails at the time, you know, from people who were having trouble with the software. And given my operational experience, especially supporting servers, the Windows servers, Windows servers at the time, functioned a whole lot like the desktop OSs. There were some differences, obviously, but for the most part, like managing most of the stuff, the UI looked the same. It just had a bunch fewer options in it, right? And so if somebody was having an issue on their desktop machine, I could pretty much troubleshoot it over the phone without actually seeing their screen. And so because of that, I was pretty good at working this stuff out. And so we got in, and we started, we were answering emails, and we were using a system called Thunderbird. And Thunderbird is the email client put together by Mozilla, right? And so we were just answering emails out of the email system. And the problem that would happen is that I would start writing an email, right? And then I'd get halfway through it, and then Thunderbird would update, and I would realize that Tom, the other guy that I was working with, had already answered the email. And then, 10 minutes later, he'd go through the same thing because I'd already answered the email. And so it turned out to be kind of a mess. And so pretty soon with two of us, it became apparent that that system was not going to work. The other thing is that we got featured in the Wall Street Journal. And so our signups and therefore our support traffic went it like 5 times or 10 times. I mean, it was just crazy. And so we started working on this system that would start pulling the emails off of the email server and put it into a database. And then it would set a mutex on the email for like 10 minutes. So if Tom opened the email in the system, then it would block me from opening it, right, for 10 minutes. And so what would happen is that it worked really well as far as being able to get the work done, because then we weren't stepping on each other's toes, right? And then if he had opened an email and then got up and walked away for 10 minutes, right, then he knew he had to refresh, because I probably gotten the email and was probably working on it, because it would just give me the next least recent email, right? The oldest email. And so we worked on that for a while, built in some other features like canned responses, right? Because I don't know how many of you have worked tech support, but if you're working in support for a product like Mozy, which was online backup software, probably 80 to 90% of our issues were all the same issue, right? They were all, you know, a handful, two or three issues that kept coming up. And so having a canned response that would say, hey, this is the information we need, or hey, try this, it made a big, big difference, because it saved us a ton of time. We didn't have to type it every time, right? We'd select it from the dropdown and hit send, right? And then when they got back more information, or hey, that fixed it, or we never heard back from them or whatever, right? Then we could follow up if we needed to. So all of a sudden, programming got really, really interesting. And I got deeper and deeper into it. Tom wound up moving over to the sales team to be their technical lead. And so I was essentially running the tech support department. I also started QAing the product, because, again, they'd release regressions, or they would release a client that had bugs in it. And so I could get the release candidates. And so if I had spare time at work, right, I'd cram through the workload, or the people I had hired, or, Tom and I started hiring people. And then when he moved on, I kept hiring people. When I had the time, I would actually QA, or, you know, when they had a release candidate, I would QA it. And then I would come back and say, hey, you know, these problems still exist, or these new problems crept up. And I remember at one point, the CEO, Josh, actually walked over to one of the developer machines, made the developer get out of his chair, sat down at the developer machine, and deployed the new version, because I had held it up for a month and a half, and people were waiting for a bunch of the bug fixes that were in it. And, I had held up the release by finding bugs in it. So this was all kind of the backstory, and they figured out that they needed to hire a QA. And so they hired, this terrific lady named Kay, as a consultant, actually, to come in and get the QA effort started. And then they hired another guy named Don to come in and do some of the rest of the work. And he was going to be the full-time QA lead on Mozy. And so, and I continued just, running support. Well, not too much later, Mozy got acquired by EMC Corporation. And I wasn't there when EMC Corporation got acquired by Dell. But that's kind of where that went. And so what wound up happening was, due to politics, I wound up moving over to QA and working with Don. And Don is the one that introduced me to podcasting. And so I'll actually tell you that bit of the story in the next episode. But I kind of wanted to set the stage here because, this was all stuff that I was very, very interested and passionate about at that point. The Ruby on Rails, the programming, the QA, all of it. And so that's what I was interested in putting content together for. And that's how a lot of this really got started. And so, you know, kind of the moral of the story here, even though I'm not even talking about being an influencer or podcasting or anything, is that if there's something that you're really deeply passionate about, usually that's the thing that you want to start doing a podcast on. And there's going to be some backstory to that as well. And that's going to be where you actually kind of come into the story. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the rest of it in the next episode. Max out, everybody.